Well, howdy, folks. Welcome to All Good in the Brotherhood podcast, part of the Benedict Project, an initiative to transform the culture in the spirit of Saint Benedict. I am Brother Francisco. I'm joined by my counterpart,
We're just leaving it, brother. We're not.
Illustrious.
All right, I like that. I like that. I was getting ready
Nate
for you.
Whitaker. Okay. No, I can compliment you sometimes. I know I don't most of the time, but I can.
Yeah, you are physically possible, or you are physically capable of doing it. Yeah, Nate and our boy here, our own Benedictine. So, yeah.
So, Say it again.
How you been?
Oh, life is good, dude. Ah, life is going to be great in I guess actually by the time this episode comes out, it will be in the past. But for now, it's still to come. I am going to Greece and Turkey to visit the churches of St. Paul and the home of Mary in Ephesus. So
you get to travel more than most people, dude. And you're
I know. I have been international every year since the novitiate.
I know. I know. I'm jealous.
So Rome, Portugal, Spain, now Greece and Turkey, also Alaska.
Yeah. It's basically out of the country. I mean, it's such a different environment. It's so far away.
It pretty much is the final frontier, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So one of the the motto of, or I guess a current more modern adaptation motto of the rule is Ora et Labora. Second to that, in St. Benedict's adaptation of St. Vincent, we add join the monastery, see the world.
Yeah.
So while people might say that that's not particularly monastic, that's how we do monasticism here, and I don't complain.
You don't complain because you happen to be one of the ones who get sent to all kinds of places.
So. Exactly. Yeah. I get to go there, and I don't have to be studying. I just get to be
that's
there.
That's true. Yeah, I bet some of your homies must get a little bit jealous. Cisco's flying off to Greece again, or heading to
some of them have commented that you seem to be away as much as you're here.
Yeah. You're like, hey, nothing I can do about that.
That's what I'm saying. It's my job. Tell me. I don't know. Yeah. I can't say. I just happen to be in the two offices that do the most traveling. But anyways, enough about me. How's life in your corner? Things going okay?
Things are going great, yeah. I've just been staying busy lately. And honestly, been a little bit behind on sleep for a few weeks now. But
fair, same.
That's okay. I say that as if I'm about to follow up by saying, so I'm making a plan to get some more sleep, but the reality is I realized I think the only time where you're guaranteed to get enough sleep is when you're a little child. And after that, unless you're really intentional about it. Now, you can be. There are people who are really intentional about it, but they miss out on other opportunities to do some other things. But if you really want to be busy and, do a lot of work and maybe have some hobbies on the side, have some time for friends, it's really hard to get good sleep every night. So, random tangent.
I told Dad the other day, I've just decided I'm no longer gaslighting myself. I am never going to, I'm not going to tell myself when Sunday rolls around, oh, finally, this will be the week I get some sleep. I'm done telling myself.
No, don't lie to yourself, because then you get frustrated by the end of the
week. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm just if I get some sleep, that's an unexpected win.
Pleasantly surprised. Yep.
Speaking of pleasantly surprised, I have a question for you. You have been in a relationship for about a year now.
Yes.
With a wonderful young lady. You've met her. Her name's – well, I'll let you talk about her. Say that again?
Nothing. Keep going.
Okay. Speaking of wonderful surprises, I was wondering –
it's a surprise that I've been in a relationship for you.
That's wild. It is. We were all kind of shocked. Nate actually can land a girlfriend.
More the fact of staying, committed for a year. No, I'm just kidding.
We thought it would be a 3 month thing, and then she would really get to know you and then leave. No,
right.
Anyways,
naturally,
surprises in your relationship this last year. Has there been an experience where maybe you guys did something together, or you had a plan, a date or whatever, and you thought it was going to be enjoyable or maybe going to be fun, but it turned out to be a really big surprise about how enjoyable it was, or maybe how deep you got with each other or how much you got to know about each other? What was that like? There is a point to that question. So,
okay. We're not just diving into my personal life for absolutely no reason.
That's right. Well, maybe. The fans in the live stream did want to know.
Yes.
They asked multiple times if you're single. So
I remember. I think
my girlfriend was
one of them, but no, a few others did too. So just to clear it up, yeah. Honestly, one of the best, surprisingly good dates was our first date. And I think this is just like, I was just thinking about this the other day, like a message I would share with dudes who are considering dating is like, try to make the first date really good. And that sounds almost obvious, but I've met a lot of dudes who kind of downplay it and say like, number one, never spend more than like $10 on a first date, or never spend more than $20 on a first date. Or number two, another rule I hear a lot of guys throw out is don't go for more than an hour and a half on a first date. Keep things kind of minimal. And the reason they're saying that is kind of fair. Like, you don't want to get overly invested in something that's just not going to work out.
Yeah, that's
potentially
true.
But, like, I think there's something really cool about just full sending. Like, if you actually care about someone and you're interested in them, just full send on a first date, see how it goes. And you might be very pleasantly surprised. So, like, yeah, as far as, like, the time rule goes that I just mentioned, we totally broke that rule. It was, let's see. Yeah. Instead of being like an hour and a half, it was closer to 5 or 6 hours. But
oh, wow.
It was like, well, basically it was like two part. We did some kayaking, so we did some outdoor stuff, and then we went and got dinner. But it was just a really good time. And we, like, because of doing that, actually taking a while, I think we both got the opportunity to talk about a lot of different subjects.
Mm-hmm.
Things like, you know, there's obviously like all the initial kind of icebreakers that people always associate with first dates that are, everybody kind of has to get out of the way, right? Like, okay, what do you do for work? Well, that wasn't the case because we were both college students, but like that, those kind of questions. What do you do for work? What are you into? What are your hobbies? What are your passions? But then like when you extend it out a little longer, you got to like step and explore some of those different topics of conversation that are a little bit more off the beaten path. So it was really enjoyable. It was just great to get to know her and a lot more than I think I expected to on the first date. And she had a good time. I had a good time. And we... I don't know if I'm allowed to say this on like a podcast, but in like a small, very fun, playful way, we did break the law during the date. And not the law of God. No, not any dating law, just the law of God. No, not the law of God, sorry.
Oh, just say the law of God, then this sounds like probably
Civil law. Some minor civil law. That's honestly in my mind not that big a deal. But like the point is, No.
Others.
But
okay.
We bonded because of it.
The names are saved to protect the innocent. Well, maybe we'll see.
Yeah, we won't. And it wasn't arson. No one was hurt in the perpetration of this crime. But the point is, we bonded a little bit over that moment. It was actually really funny. It was a funny situation. I feel bad bringing it up and not being able to like say what it was because it was funny. But I have heard that. We could get fact-checked for that. Exactly. So the point is, like, doing something unexpected and spontaneous, even maybe at the expense of the law, can really bring you together.
That's so great.
Yeah.
That's awesome, though. Yeah. And also, just kind of like speaking to like the adaptability of that, I mean, I'm guessing you weren't planning on necessarily it being a 6-hour endeavor, like maybe longer than a couple hours, because if you're going kayaking and dinner, that's probably at least like a 3 or 4 hour endeavor you're probably planning. But it sounds like it got even more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Which that's just a really healthy sign of even friendship,
right?
Like we're separate from romantic. And Tom, Molly, and Johanna talked about platonic relationships a couple of weeks ago,
right?
But even more so in regards of, especially when you're starting a relationship, like that's a good healthy like grounding, and especially if then the follow ups were, you know, similar in either length or in depth, then that just like increases things.
Yeah. No, 100%. That they were, and that's, I think that was really good. Is that like, you don't have to plan everything to a T, but you should be. If you're not going to plan everything to a T, then you should focus on being the kind of person where you can create a spirit of spontaneity. So, yeah, that was really good. I guess I'm kind of wondering, going off this. I mean, I know you have a different perspective because you're a monk. And so you're not obviously actively dating, and you haven't been for quite some time since before.
No, 6 years at least.
Exactly.
But anyways, yeah.
What are your thoughts on dating? Do you have any hot takes or any wisdom that you've gained? Because I know you work with college students, right? So
yes.
I'm sure you encounter a lot of couples. You probably have a lot of observations you made from couples, like, oh, these ones are doing things right. Those ones are doing things a little weirder, so on and so forth. So do you have any wisdom over the years from either working in college, working with college students or being a college student, or just even as a monk? Like, you've learned a lot of stuff about theology, and I'm sure interpersonal matters and like romantic stuff has come up even in moral theology. So yeah, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, that's great. There is a lot we learn in seminary, and I think there are things, and actually I like want to do even like a book or video series on like parts of this, but how even the rule and the way St. Benedict talks about interpersonal relationships, they're very applicable to dating. And I can get into that maybe in a little bit, or if you have like specific questions.
Yeah.
But just based on my own ministry, I'll start there. I've been working in campus ministry for 5 years now. And so I have seen a full gambit plus of students, you know, so who start as freshmen, go all the way to graduation and even more. And I've seen a lot of relationships come and go, or come and then get married.
Some turn into marriage, right?
I've been to a lot of weddings from former students. Yeah. So I have seen, yeah, exactly. Successful ones, unsuccessful ones, healthy ones, unhealthy ones. And for a while it was, very helpful. One of, the other employees of campus ministry, her name is Sophie, was one of my best friends, was the director for women's ministry, and I'm the director of men's ministry. So I would have the guys come talk to me about the relationships, and she would have the girls. And while we weren't, you know, disclosing everything that individual said to us, because there's still confidence, we could talk about like general dynamics, or be like, hey, you know, what generally do you think about this relationship that's going on here? Not disclosing all of their info, keeping things private, but, you know, do you think this is a healthy dynamic? How would you give advice? This guy said this to me, or this girl said this to me. And that taught me a lot. And I would say for a long time, and I still kind of think this is true, but some students have told me otherwise, I don't think I give the best relationship advice. Like, I really don't feel like I'm very qualified in this area, especially when it comes to romantic friendship advice. I'm okay on, but romantic relationship, I still think I'm pretty bad at. But some students have told me that they think otherwise. Anyways, I will say two signs of healthy and two signs of unhealthy to me that I think I've picked up as far as relationships. So a really a really healthy indicator if someone is kind of even fit to be in a relationship is having stable, healthy relationships with their own gender. Mm-hmm. So guys having good guy friends who he spends consistent time with, he has deep relationships with, and he knows there's a mutuality of, hey, I'm going through crap, I can go to you. You're going through crap, you can come to me. Same thing with girls. And it generally, girls have tend to have that more. But sometimes I've also realized that a lot of girls have a very fluctuation of those kind of relationships. Yep. So they get really, really deep with a lot of girls, and then drama hits, and then they lose all of them. And then they form a new friend of girls, and then the same thing kind of happens.
Cycle, yeah.
And if there isn't stability there, then when people come, this is the unhealthy part, when they come into relationship, they depend on each other for stability. And they depend on each other to be the solution to all of their problems. And as soon as that happens, you have a guy trying to understand girls' issues and a girl trying to support a man and his problems. And that can be helpful because we have different perspectives, and there's ways in which men and women can like speak truth that is just really foreign to the way a man's mind or a woman's mind works. But there is still a missing link of understanding.
Yeah.
And if you don't have good friendships and your only friend is also the person you're dating, there just brings up a whole host of problems that, and I've seen a lot of relationships that fall apart, is that they expect the person they're dating to basically be their savior. And that is also problematic if they don't have a good prayer life. And that's the second unhealthy thing that I notice. If they're not rooted in their own relationship with Christ, even if they're a practicing Catholic or practicing Christian, you know, going to church, doing some prayer, if their prayer life is not the most fundamental thing to them, and they kind of make it a subsidiary of their relationship with this person,
yeah,
it your priorities are off.
Yeah.
And so this person becomes Jesus to me rather than Jesus himself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the unhealthy aspect of it. The healthy
can
one.
Can I just speak into that real quick?
Yeah. Feel free. Yeah. Don't let me just ramble. Like I'd love to hear your side on this too.
Right. I just fully agree with both those because it seems like in both of them, what you're seeking is some entirety of your happiness in the other person. You're looking for fulfillment of all of your needs for communion in the other person, whether it's your communion that you should seek with other friends, like friends of your own sex. The other person can't provide all that. Like they can provide sympathy if you're going through tough stuff, or they can provide support when you're striving for greatness, but they can't provide that particular kind of empathy and what you said, understanding that comes from only something that like I, as a guy, can have with other guys or that a girl can have with other girls. So yeah, I think it's a great point because like otherwise what happens is I think people can become very frustrated when they're expecting that, that level of understanding. And of course you want to strive continually throughout a relationship to understand one another and to always be growing in your deepening understanding of one another and anticipating the other person's needs and stuff like that. But the problem is when you overly expect that they're just going to get you 100%, that's not realistic and it can wind up with very frustrated expectations. Then on the flip side with God, it's really interesting to point that out because I think that can really turn into a form of idolatry, which is, it's funny, you know, when we say in the first commandment, you shall have no other gods before me. We often think of that in relation to the golden calf or Zeus, right? These other kind of gods, or even in terms of material possessions and money.
Yeah,
and things. There's money. Kind of obvious idols, but it's like, it's really important to remember that the other person in a relationship can also become an idol where, okay, instead of turning to God in prayer when you're at your lowest points or when you're struggling throughout your day, you turn to them. Or, you know, when you're looking for affirmation of your own identity, instead of remembering that you are a child of God, you turn to them to remind you that, like, they just, I don't know, see you in some certain way. And again, seeking their support, great. Seeking affirmation, great. Even expecting that they're going to add to your happiness, that's totally good. That's one of the beauties of a relationship.
Yeah, and that's valid.
Exactly. These are all valid things, but expecting that all your happiness should come from them is unrealistic, and it's not fair to you, it's not fair to them, and it's not fair to God. So, sorry.
I really like that point, and actually, that was connected to something I had a conversation with a friend with before, and we were more talking about, like, overusage of phones or, you know, whatever, but whatever you turn to first when you're bored, when you're lonely, or when you're feeling any emotion that you don't want to feel, whatever you turn to first, that is a God to you because you're saying, this is my solution. And so if it's not God himself, then we're turning to something else thinking like this will satisfy or this will take care, this will numb, whatever. And if it can be a person. And also something I tell students a lot is whomever or whatever you spend most time with during your day, that's what you love the most. And now, you know, I'm not telling them be in the chapel for 8 hours a day because you have school. You probably spend most of your time in the day doing homework. That doesn't necessarily mean you love homework. But whatever you choose to do with the time that isn't required of you in other places, whatever you choose to do with that time, or whatever your first instinct is to do with that time, that's what you love the most. That's what I would say.
I like that because it's not just saying like, oh, don't spend time with the other person or don't set aside a portion of your free time for them. But just, you know, look at your life and recognize, okay, what are kind of the Sabbath moments in your life, right? Because we're instructed by God that we should set aside 1/7 of our week, the Sabbath, to be dedicated to God. So it's like, okay, even if it's not exactly that one day, what are throughout our day, each individual day, what are those moments that we have that we can dedicate to something, whether it's to God or to some recreational activity or to something? It's like we should be analytical of that and recognizing what we're directing that to. And if it's another person, whether it's a like romantic partner or even just a friend, like because friendships can often fall into the same areas where we make a particular friend an idol or make them
that's really true
a source of all of our satisfaction. And either way, we need to kind of keep that in check. And I think a practical way to do that is what you already said, which is just making sure you prioritize prayer. It's not about cutting down on your relationships with other people or saying, well, you know, I can only let myself get so close to this person. No, it's not about that. You should be able to fully invest in a relationship, but you just got to make sure it's not your number one priority. Your number one priority has to be your relationship with God.
Mm-hmm. And you use the word idle again, which made me think of something that Father Tom told me one time, which is when, and we do this sometimes, whether the people romantically or friends or people we look up to, we idolize them. And I think you, Tom, and I had an episode we talked about idols and making idols out of people or out of things. And I don't remember if I mentioned this or not, but I remember Father Tom telling me, whenever we turn someone into an idol, we actually are no longer loving them. We're loving the idea of them, but we're not loving them. So if that happens in a relationship, we love the idea of what this guy or girl will do for me, how they'll love me, how they'll accept me. And then we get super, gets super frustrated when that reality doesn't match up to our ideal. And that's where a lot of relationships get ruptured, is like, you aren't this to me. I need this. It's like, well, you weren't accepting the person as they are. Or you weren't communicating your needs with them because you just anticipated or expected, this is how I see them. This is how they are. Why wouldn't they be anything else?
100%. So. Yeah, and then people wind up, you know, years into a relationship saying, oh, you're not the man I married, or you're not the woman I married, or you're not who I thought you were. When in reality, maybe they are exactly who they've always been, but you created sort of an idealized form of them in your mind by making them into an idol. So it's really important. So it's not just important for like our moral security or for our relationship with God that we make sure not to make other people into idols, but it's actually good for those relationships with those people that we not turn them into idols.
So
those are two, I guess, negatives you said to avoid. What are some positives that you've picked up?
Well, I think just like the counters to that, you know, a strong, deep prayer life, relationship with God, putting him as your priority, and having stable, healthy relationships with other people. And also really healthy self-knowledge. If people aren't knowledgeable or self-aware of themselves before they get into a relationship, that might be a place where God is able to work and help them understand. If that relationship is healthy and good, more power to them. But I think a lot, and this is why I have almost to the point come to not even liking the idea of college students dating each other, is that so most of them are not self-aware enough to know how to communicate their needs, how to understand this is when I'm not in a good place and I need to be able to express that. These are my insecurities that I'm hoping that they'll fill or they'll answer. If they don't know these things, then when those things are coming up, they feel frustrated or feel like there's difficulty or there's tension, and they blame themselves or blame the other person, but they don't know why. And that's why Saint Benedict mentions a lot, and this is just like really important to like our spiritual life in general, but before we can actually give ourselves to another person, we have to first know ourselves, accept ourselves, then we can give. And that's like, for me, that's how I see monastic formation. The novitiate is coming to know yourself. 3 years of the juniorate is to accept what you learned. And then the rest of your life is to give all of that away.
I love that. That's fantastic, because I like that you drew a distinction between self-knowledge and being perfect or something. Because, or at least I think you hinted at it, because it's not possible for us in this life to become totally perfect, where we've ironed out all of our weaknesses, we've overcome all of our tendencies towards sin, we've overcome any of our insecurities or our failings. But it is possible in this life to come to a very deep level of self-knowledge. So I think the reason I'm bringing this up is because it seems like to make a gift of yourself in a relationship, you do not have to be perfect by any means. People can make beautiful gifts of themselves in a relationship or even in full-on marriage, even when they're struggling with a lot of sin, even when they have issues going on mentally or psychologically, even when they have emotional wounds. They really can do it if they're both willing to work with each other, as long as they have self-knowledge, as long as they're able to look at themselves in the mirror and be like, I actually know who I'm looking at when I look in the mirror. And I know both my good parts and the beautiful parts of my soul, but I also know my weaknesses. And it like, yeah, they're not going to be perfect. They're never going to be perfect anyway, like I said, in this whole life. But as long as they have that self-knowledge, and they're willing to work through recognizing each other and truly seeing each other, then it can work out, I think. And that's, at least from what I've seen, the best marriages I've seen and the best husbands and wives that I've seen, it's because that's at the core of it. They
Yeah, yeah.
knew who they were. They were able to accept who the other person was, and they were able to love each other through that. Rather than, again, setting people up as idols, making them into more idealized than they really are, or the flip side, turning each other into some kind of negative monsters and just ending the relationship.
Yeah,
Instead, just
yep.
recognizing, no, we're human beings. We're both good and we're both fallen, and we need to love each other through that.
Yeah, I agree. And that just made me think of one of the aspects of obedience to Saint Benedict is what he calls mutual obedience. So we kind of always think about obedience being just like a vertical thing. People are above you and you listen to what they say. But he says there's a horizontal aspect to obedience that people who are like equal to us or parallel, we obedience isn't so much like you tell me what to do and I do it, because then we're a doormat to everyone. But rather saying there's a give and take in listening and in speaking, in giving and receiving, in knowing and letting yourself be known. And he uses the word obedience because the root of the word obedience is to listen. So he's saying, like, if you're not listening to the other people, you one won't know them, but actually, you won't know yourself. Because there's a way in which a person outside of us can give us a much clearer vision of who we are. But if we don't listen to them and their perspective or their own insights and experiences, we'll only be living in this idea of ourselves or the lies that we've told ourselves or this ego that we've created. So I think that's super important in marriage when you're committed fully in a relationship, but even when you're dating, there has to be this willingness to have a mutual obedience to each other. And he'll say that means at times one person will have the ability and the authority to tell the other person, no, you should or shouldn't do this, and humility tied with that to accept and receive. And if that doesn't exist in a dating relationship, it's not going to just magically happen in a marriage either. So the foundations of it have to be put first into anything that you begin.
It does seem like also I'm glad that you brought up humility, because it seems like humility is also essential for a healthy relationship.
100%.
So many relationships have been ruined by people's egos, right? And it's so tempting to let that happen, right?
Probably all of them, in
In
like
some
deep
sense,
down, most of
right.
them.
Yeah, I mean, let's do some basic logic here. Sin is the cause of all unhappiness, including unhappiness in relationships. And what is the root of all sin is pride. So, to some extent, at the core of every heartbreak, at the core of every situationship, at the core of every mess up in a relationship and, breakup, there's probably some level of pride, whether it's someone unnecessarily thinking they're better than the other person, someone lacking some respect for the other person, two people not being willing to communicate with each other because they just either want the other person to read their minds or they're not willing to have the humility to just communicate openly and be vulnerable. Whatever the reason might be, pride is at the core of a lot of mess ups in relationships and a lot of heartache. So, I mean, so much of work in the spiritual life and even just on a psychological level comes down to working on overcoming pride for any of us, because to some extent, all of us human beings struggle with some pride. But yeah, I think it's just good to recognize that like as you grow in the virtue of humility, in contrast to pride, your relationships are going to look better. Your relationships with friends, your relationship with God, and your romantic relationships, because there's just a more of an openness that can come through that. So I guess it's one way Saint Benedict could all help us out. So what else you got? What other, I don't know, what other tips or tricks you think as a Benedictine could help a relationship?
Well, actually, since you mentioned that, I happened to pull out the copy of my copy of the rule. I guess you can't see it. It's like whited up by the light.
White.
You can there. The rule of Saint Benedict. It's pretty short, actually. It's only like 80 pages.
You can find the full PDF online.
Yeah, you can. So it's really cool. There are a lot of things actually from it that I think are applicable, but I wanted to look at when he talks about silence, because we, I think especially when you're in a relationship, when you're doing one-on-one time, there's this expectation that you're always talking, right? Or I need to say what I feel. I need to listen to what they're saying. And yes, that is super essential in growing in relationship and understanding. But we also just assume that that's always necessary. But here, Benedict in chapter 6 on the restraint of speech slash silence. He quotes Psalm 38, where the psalmist first says, I have resolved to keep watch over my ways that I may never sin with my tongue. I have put a guard on my mouth. But then the second half of it, he says, I was silent and was humbled, and I refrained even from good words. And then he follows and says, here the prophet indicates that there are times when even good words are to be left unsaid out of an esteem for silence. And that seems a little bit strange, right? Shouldn't we always say the good word? And shouldn't we compliment the other person or, say, hey, you look really pretty today or whatever it is. You know, shouldn't we say those things? What Benedict is hinting at, I mean, this is also for monks and we're supposed to practice silence in general. But I think there can sometimes be these expectations or this ego, again, this pride, that gets associated or caught up in even the good things we say. So that sometimes we say good things because we just expect that the other person needs to hear them. So maybe we don't mean them. And we just say them.
Yeah, like flattery.
And they sound good.
Almost.
But what's our intention? Is our intention to be like, this person, you know, they receive from me what I think they want to hear. They'll love me more. Or they won't leave me as long as I tell them good things, even if I don't mean them.
Yeah.
Or on the opposite, I want them to think that I always think about them, that I always have the right words to say. Because we hate getting caught up in not having the right things to say, especially with someone we care about. We don't want to look like the fool. We don't want to look like the idiot. But Benedict is saying, even if it's good, it doesn't always have to be said. And that can be really humbling and really challenging. But I think he's calling monks to be willing to just accept the other person's presence, not demand anything from them, not expect anything from them, but love them because they're there.
Yeah.
And to me, I would offer to advise people who are dating, like, are you able to just be with the person? Or are you able to be away from them, but still love them? If you have to always be there and always saying affirmations or saying deep conversations, just always being talking, and having them talk at you, what would happen if you just were silent? Because if you're uncomfortable in the silence, then there might be actually something deeper that needs to be addressed. Yeah. If you can be comfortable just being together, silent, that's a really strong test of a healthy relationship.
Absolutely.
That's my thoughts. So just curious, Nate, on kind of your perspective or if that tracks for you. Like, what do you think the value of that, the ability to just kind of be silently together? Do you think that makes sense? And what would that look like? Or what do you want to respond to? I'll leave it open.
Yeah, I think it is important. And I think part of the reason I'm thinking that is because by analogy to our relationship with God, it's really important to distinguish between loving a person and loving just good things that might be around the person or might come along with the person. Mm-hmm. So, for example, with God, and I was hearing a talk about this recently in regard to the story of Abraham sacrificing Isaac, right, is that the ultimate test on Mount Moriah was God was testing Abraham on whether he truly loves God with all of his heart or whether he just loves the good things that come from God, in this case, Isaac. And that's a challenge for all of us in our relationship with God, is that do we really love our Creator and our Redeemer for his own sake, no matter what we're going through, or do we just love the consolations that he gives to us, or the moments of joy, or the moments where we really hear his voice, kind of the moments where he seems to break through the silence? Do we love God in silence, or do we love him when he speaks? And by analogy, similarly with our relationship with each other, and with, it could be with friends, or it could be with, you know, romantic partners, do we really love the other person as a person, or do we just see them as an object that brings a lot of joy and moments of fun into our life? And that could even be like good things. I'm not talking about lusting after the other person or manipulating them or using them, but even in kind of wholesome ways, we can still see the other person as some sort of an object and less as a person we sought for their own sake. Or we can see them at least as good primarily for the things that they bring to us. So one example of this is, or one example where this gets tested is in silence. So if you really love the other person, sure, you're going to love talking to them. You like their ideas. You like the way they think. You like the way they speak. That's super fair. and it's awesome to listen to them. It's awesome to share your own thoughts with them. But in a shallow relationship, it has to just stay at that. It kind of has to stay at the surface level where really what you care about is these fun conversations or hearing their ideas or sharing your ideas with somebody who will actually listen. And then it kind of stays at the surface because you're really just fixated on what it feels like to be around them and what are those sentiments.
Yeah.
Whereas with a deep relationship, when you truly love the person unconditionally, it should reach a point where you don't have to be hearing interesting thoughts from them. You don't have to be sharing your thoughts with them. You don't have to be talking about a bunch of cool things, or even you don't even have to always be having new and radical experiences. You can just be in their presence and let yourself be in their presence. And that can be enough, because when you really love the other person simply for who they are rather than just what they bring into your life, then you can be in with them in the silence. You can have a non-awkward silence. People always use the term awkward silence, but silence is not by nature awkward. It's only awkward if you have a superficial relationship. But once you get into a deep relationship, you should be able to just, you know, sit in a long car ride and not say anything and be okay with that. Or you should be able to sit, you know, at a park and be like, we don't have to talk right now. And it's great to talk. Conversation is awesome and it brings you together and it's a way to get to know the other person. But ultimately, I think I see silence is really important in line with what you're saying, because it's a testing ground. It's not just that it brings you together, but it's kind of a place where you prove whether or not you can kind of like experience the silence and examine your own reaction to that silence. And it's a place where you can prove to yourself whether or not this is really a deep relationship where you love the other person, or if you just love the feelings that come from conversation.
Yeah, that's really important, that point, because people will pursue relationships and marriage based off of that.
Yeah.
This person makes me feel different. And I've heard people say that, like, I've never felt this way for someone before. I'm like, okay, that's good, but are you saying you haven't felt this way about a person?
Yeah.
Or you haven't felt this way around a person?
Yeah.
Because those are very different things. Mm-hmm. And if you base it off of those good feelings, or whenever I'm around them, that the conversations we have are so deep all the time, or that they just bring new life in ways other people haven't. Those are all good things. I'm not saying those aren't.
Right.
But when those run dry, which they will, because they're finite, what are you holding on to? And if it's that feeling, that consolation, when it's not there, then you will drop it.
Yeah.
Like tomorrow's garbage. And that's what people do with God too, right? They love the God of consolation, or they love the consolations of God. And when the consolations are done, they say, well, God, you never loved me to begin with, or you're only so much, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we do the same thing to other people.
Well,
you don't really love me because I don't feel this way anymore. So it must be your problem.
Right.
You don't love me. Or I guess I don't love you anymore because I don't feel this way. So it's over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really important. Exactly. And silence, like you said, is a really great, natural, easy testing ground.
Right.
It's not easy, but it's easy to practice it as a testing ground, maybe I should say. Yeah. I don't know if that makes sense, but
yeah, absolutely. And part of this is also growing in the virtue of humility yet again, because as long as you're always having things to say and you're always popping off with new topics of conversation or just new activities, you can keep it superficial and you can kind of only show them your good side, because you're like, hey, I've always got cool things to say. I've always got interesting things to talk about. This is sick.
Yeah,
it kind of boosts up the person's ego or your own ego. But once you get to that place of silence, there's a little bit more vulnerability there, because part of it is recognizing there's not always something exciting every single moment. There's not always something new to talk about. In my own relationship, to be honest, there are moments where it's like we're thinking of we want to get to know each other better, right? And part of that is talking about deep stuff. But we're like, we've talked about a lot of deep stuff, which is good. But like the point is, sometimes there's moments where we're like, okay, what's something new we could talk about? And it's not always obvious, but it's okay. It's like, all right, this is chill. We can be chill in this moment and recognize that we don't always have to be talking about something new. And I mean, I'm saying this as a chronic yapper. Like I just love talking and I love having, I'm addicted to deep conversations. Yeah. I hate small talk sometimes. So it's like, I'm always tempted to try to be like, no, we should push for having something new and deep to talk about, but like, you don't have to. And it's okay to be humble there and not feel that urge of pride and the ego to be like, no, we're always going to be popping off. We're always going to be having something interesting to say.
Mm.
Because that's the real you. Like, the real human being is never 100%, or it's not always 100% interesting. It's not always 100% engaging. The real human being has ups and downs and just moments of plateau where there's silence, and it's okay. And if you really want to be in a relationship with someone, you should let them be in a relationship with you as a real human being. So like the sooner you can kind of get past the facade and kind of get past some of those early stages of superficiality, the better in the long run. Unless you just want it to be a quick, like, 3-month fling, then, like, yeah, go ahead and
then just, like, ride the wave of the honeymoon phase. 100%, 100%. Yeah, which a lot of people do.
Yep, and then crash. But, yeah, so, okay, I've asked you a couple of general questions on what advice you might have as a celibate for romantic people, but...
Sorry. It is kind of ironic. I was giving relationship advice.
Yeah, so do you have any advice as a Benedictine or from the wisdom of St. Benedict on what a couple could do that's really struggling, whether they're dating or married? Mm-hmm. If they're really struggling in communication or just struggling to make things work and maybe they're getting the sense that things are going downhill, what do you think they could do to help boost their relationship and get things back on track?
Yeah, okay. So there's a lot to that. And again, I'm you know, not going to give perfect advice or it's not going to be certain, right? If you follow the step every in way that Benedict would prescribe, that this for sure would work. But I think going back to, you brought up humility multiple times, and the central spiritual chapter of the whole rule, well, the two kind of are the prologue, the very beginning, and then chapter 7, which is on humility. And there are a lot, there are 12 steps to Benedict's ladder of humility by which a monk grows. And there are two that I think are particularly helpful. And let's see, I'm just make sure I find them. Okay, so the thing that I think is really important when like a couple is struggling is Benedict talks about speaking things out. So he says in step 5 that a monk does not conceal from his abbot any sinful thoughts he's entertaining in his heart or any wrongs committed in secret, but rather confesses them humbly. Mm. I think sometimes like struggles can be existing or, you know, the cause of some of the struggles have been secrets that were kept in the dark but then come out. Or ones that are still being kept, and that's what's oppressing the people, and it's causing them to drift apart, and they can't like label why, but they know that something's happening. So for that, I would say, like, even for just continuity and for closure, even if it means that the relationship ends up ending, at least it ends much better than it otherwise would have, and it might even keep it together, is speak out all the things. Say them. Say like, look, I know I messed up here, and admit, and don't say you caused me to do this. I was responding to the thing you said. Just list the defects and the character flaws and the things that you said, the things that you did in secret. Maybe they're big, maybe they're not, but as long as they're said, now it's scary and it's dangerous, and maybe the other person doesn't receive it, but there is a freedom that we can have. And even if the relationship ends, it ends with a greater sense of freedom than feeling like things were just ruptured. Right. But hopefully, if there was at least a core of this relationship that was healthy, or that desire to mutuality of flourishing and of love, that if you're extending yourself out, the other person will receive it. And then it has to be mutual. They turn and say it. And then the second part of that, Benedict also says, you know, he's saying here that the monk disclosed to his abbot, so his superior. I would translate as, like, they also need to be taking this to prayer and to some kind of spiritual director or advisor. The couples are not going to solve this one-on-one.
Yeah.
God walked with Adam and Eve in the garden. He didn't create them and then tell them to go walk on their own. God was always present in their own relationship.
Yeah.
So if you're not bringing God and being honest with him or someone to give you spiritual advice and to walk through these things, whether it's, I mean, if you're married, certainly counseling, but if you're not, it's weird to have couples counseling when you're dating, but at least that you're both talking to someone else, get a third perspective and someone who preferably has an understanding of the spiritual life. Cause they could be pointing out other things like, well, you're not doing this here. So that could be contributing, or maybe you can invite your boyfriend or your girlfriend to do this with you, walking through these things together. And both of those require humility, being honest and being open and having to admit to other people and then taking direction and advice from someone who he might tell you something and you're like, I really don't want to do that. Sure. Like, well, would you rather do the hard thing and stay in a relationship or break it up and then have the hard thing? So that's what I would say. Yeah. And I know we were wanting to close on this, so I won't speak too much more. But that's my thought.
Yeah.
You know, take it or leave it.
No, it's fantastic. How do you think St. Benedict would plan a first date?
Wow. Well, I think he would take them to a cave.
Yeah. He hated the world. That sounds problematic.
No, not in a weird way. I know that sounds like sketchy. Blocking. But no, I think he would go and have like a cave with like a picnic in a cave. Okay. It's like quiet, secluded, very, very simple. Mm-hmm. And be free of distraction and just be present with the person.
Sounds great.
And maybe go on a boat. He lived by a lake, so maybe they would go on a boat. Fantastic.
All right, I know you're locked in, but last question then. What would you do if you weren't locked in the monastery for a first date?
For a first date? Oh, man, dude. I also like the idea of picnics. I think picnics are a really cool thing. If like a beach was nearby, I think a picnic on the beach is a really cool idea. Or if not, the picnic in the woods. That'd be my other option. And then walking together to get there, and being really intentional, you know, of finding like maybe the things that she likes to eat, maybe having a little candle in the picnic basket, maybe music, maybe not.
Yeah.
And then just like a nice drive back.
Yeah.
And I don't think movies are like creating a bunch of entertainment things in a first date is good.
Movies first date is a no-go. For one thing, you're not even looking at each other. You're just looking at a third thing. It's just,
Yeah. But I would say both of those, like if you're on the beach or in the woods, then like a walk afterwards is like really cool 100%. Idea. Like taking a hike in the woods or just a walk on the beach.
Yeah.
People try to make things overly complicated. And like I try to just like, when guys come to me like, oh, I'll do all this. I did all this. I'm like, why didn't you just like, I don't know, go into Winnie Palmer and just like set up a picnic basket. Like to me, that's just like super easy.
Yeah. And it actually does show intentionality. In general, nature is just a win. If you can have a date that includes some time being in nature, that's a win.
Yeah. Well, speaking of relationships and dating, I know you have a phone call to get to.
Yeah.
And since we've already delayed that with her, because we told her we were done, we'll officially sign off. So do you have any final things you wanted to say?
No, other than that, I'm happy for you that dating never worked out, because then we wouldn't have a soon-to-be priest in the family.
That's true. I am now, brutal. From today, 87 days from diaconate ordination.
That's crazy, bro. You can baptize people pretty soon. That must feel pretty lit.
I know. I can't wait.
Yeah.
I'm pumped.
Alrighty, praise God. Well, thanks so much. This was a good talk. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was
awesome. Well, thank you all for joining us for another episode of All Good in the Brotherhood podcast, part of the Benedict Project.
Yeah.
If you enjoyed this, you know, make sure you follow us on YouTube, but also we have Instagram and Facebook. You can find us at the Benedict Project there. And if you thought this video was helpful, maybe in your own dating life, or you think someone would, you can share this with them, or, you know, drop a comment if you're like, what about this? Or if you have questions, you're like, what would St. Benedict say about this situation? Or what are some advice you'd give from either of our perspectives? But if you're looking from an Ask Me or lay perspective, like, please.
Who knew a monk would have so many thoughts on dating? You know, it's crazy. Go figure.
I have a lot. I actually have a lot. So much that I haven't outlined for a book on this.
Okay, so we should probably do multiple episodes, but let's sign off for now.
All right. Thank you, Brother Francisco. That's Nate. Have a wonderful day.
All right, peace.